Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show. Welcome to Comic Chatter. It's me, Ray.
And Cicely.
And today we're going to be covering The Batman. All right, quick facts first. The Batman was a very recent release. It made its worldwide release March 4th, 2022. Directed by Matt Reeves. Written by Matt Reeves and Peter Craig. Produced by Dylan Clark and, you guessed it, Matt Reeves. Along with DC Films, Six in Idaho, and Dylan Clark Productions. Cinematographer is Greg Frazier. It was edited by William Hoy and Tyler Nelson. Its music was composed by Michael Giacchino, and it was distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures on a budget of $200 million. And the box office, as of this recording, we're like roughly 2 weeks out from, not even a full 2 weeks. We're like a week and a half out from the film's release. And it has made $318.2 million, which is a 59.1% profit in the box office. How crazy is that?
That's pretty big.
All right, we're going to be discussing the movie. We're going to quickly run down the cast so that you guys know who we're talking about. Main character is Bruce Wayne / Batman, that being played by Robert Pattinson. He's primarily known from Twilight, as I'm sure our audience is aware. We got Zoe Kravitz, who's playing Selina Kyle / Catwoman. Paul Dano as Edward Nashton / Riddler. Jeffrey Wright as James Gordon. John Turturro as Carmine Falcone. Not Falcone, which is how I always thought it was pronounced, but Carmine Falcone. Peter Sarsgaard as Gil Coulson. Andy Serkis as Alfred Pennyworth, and Colin Farrell as Oswald Oz Cobblepot / Penguin. All right, are you ready to run down the plot?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. It all started on a solemn Halloween night. That's fitting that this started at Halloween, right?
I think so, yeah.
I almost thought they were going to tease, like, The Long Halloween, which is another infamous Batman storyline, but no, they didn't go that route. There was some inspiration from it, but they didn't go that route. The Gotham City mayor is murdered by Riddler, and meanwhile, we do establish that Bruce Wayne has been operating as Batman for 2 years now. He gets to hit the opening scene where he gets to beat the shit out of some gangsters. I have some words about that scene. What were your feelings on that opening scene where he just beats the shit out of these, like, skull face painted gangsters?
I would say it gives us a glimpse into what to expect from this Batman. Like, obviously it shows that he's badass, he can beat up a gang of mobsters. Like, there wasn't really anything special about this gang of people. Like, one of them had a gun. But, like, that was pretty much as intense as it got. Like, yeah, they tried to overpower him. They didn't.
This scene was also home to, like, that infamous, I don't want to say infamous, because I think in the long run it wasn't that big a deal. But in the trailers, you hear Robert Pattinson go, "I'm vengeance." And that's where he gets to say that line in this scene. That line, I believe they took inspiration from Batman the Animated Series, where Batman gets to say, "I am vengeance, I am the night, I am Batman." And another fun fact, when you watch this scene, there's like one gang member that they kind of focus on who's not in the fight. He's got like only half his face paint on. Fun fact, the man who plays that character, Jay Lycurgo, he plays Tim Drake on season 3 of Titans.
Cool.
Yeah, and I thought that was really interesting because Tim Drake would go, in the comics, goes on to become Red Robin under Batman. So I'm just like, okay, it's a maybe some foreshadowing, maybe, like, but I thought that was a really nice touch there. Obviously, they didn't intend to do it on purpose. I'm pretty sure that was filmed before he got casted as Tim Drake in Titans. But as we continue along, we get to see Batman work on the mayor's murder case. We get to find the I'm not very happy with the costume design for Riddler, but I'm happy with the riddles. How'd you feel they did with the riddles, especially in this first scene where we get to see the Riddler's work?
I mean, obviously the riddles weren't, like, extremely obvious, so it wasn't something that you were able to just easily be able to, like, be like, yeah, except for, like, maybe one of them. But I think that they, like, used a good amount of mystery behind the riddles.
Yeah, like, that. I felt bad, because, like, I say I feel bad. I felt great. The first riddle they do, which is about the mayor, it was, what does a liar do when he dies? And I immediately was like, he lies still. And that was the answer to the riddle. And I laughed, because all these detectives are just like, we have no idea what this means. There's a cipher. What about a cipher? What's the answer to the riddle? And then Batman's just stares at like, he lies still. Boom. That's the answer. Like, I'm just like, this is like the standard for the world's greatest detective. Is it just that all the other cops are just bumbling fucking idiots?
Yes.
I will say, I know we forgot to say this in the beginning. We're covering the whole movie. Full spoilers. I'm going to get that. I'm going to say that right now.
Y'all shouldn't be surprised at this point.
Yeah, right? So, meanwhile, after we do that, Batman goes back to the Batcave, which, by the way, in the beginning of this movie, he doesn't have the Batmobile. Like, he literally, like, takes time to get out of his bat costume and then puts a motorcycle helmet on and then just drives away. Like, you're 2 years in and you don't have the Batmobile? It's something I'm a little surprised by, but I also kind of like, because I know Matt Reeves was going for a more realistic take on this film. So, it makes sense, like, yes, he's a billionaire, but is he going to have this great car right off the bat? Likely not, especially because Robert Pattinson seems like, I don't know, I feel like Robert Pattinson's take on Batman isn't super, like, speculative. I feel like it's much more impulsive, if that makes sense. So as he goes to the Batcave, we are introduced to a bit more of the technology that Batman has at his disposal. He does have all these computers. He has, like, these contact lenses that record everything. And he just forces himself to watch everything that happened the night before in the morning. We get to see our first look at Andy Serkis as Alfred. I love Andy Serkis. Amazing actor. I'm going to say right now he got robbed of screen time. He's barely in this movie. This is a 3-hour movie, people. Alfred gets like maybe 8 minutes. I was shocked, and I just did not like it. So as we are continuing this sordid affair of trying to figure out why this terrorist, because I guess they're going with Riddler being a terrorist in this story arc. We're not going with, oh, he's a criminal. Oh, he's this theme villain. No, they're going with he's just a full-blown terrorist. And there's all these cheeky little puns. I wouldn't have called them riddles. I would call them puns, because Batman's like, oh yeah, I found the location of a thumb drive, and then it's a flash drive with a severed thumb connected to it. And then they're looking for a passcode, and he just hands Gordon the thumb and he's like, try this. And you find out it's fingerprint ID'd, and it's like, oh my god, this little bastard. And there, at this point, there's a lot of different things happening. Batman does continue investigating, and he goes to the Iceberg Lounge, very infamous in the comics. He goes to meet up with Penguin. One part I love is when he gets there, and there are twins. And they never say what the twins' names are. And I swear to God, I want them to be Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Because those are actual Batman villains in the comics. I so badly wanted them to just cheekily call one of them D and Dumb. Just so I could have that Easter egg connection. But it wasn't there. after Batman, and he goes there as Batman. He doesn't go there as Bruce Wayne. He literally just walks in the front door as Batman and just starts a fight with all of them. But eventually, Oswald, Colin Farrell as Penguin, love him. I'm not super familiar with Colin Farrell's work. Are you?
No.
But Colin Farrell did absolutely amazing as Penguin. I absolutely loved it. He had this mob boss, godfather feel to him. Like, he never outright did anything illegal, but he, you know that he's doing some illegal shit the entire time Batman's talking to him in this office. And then we see Zoe Kravitz make her entrance. I gotta say, what the casting of Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle, the casting was just terrific throughout this whole film, in my opinion. How do you think Zoe Kravitz did as Selina Kyle?
I think she blew it out of the park.
Right?
She came, she served, she understood the assignment.
She just walks in, and there's almost, like, I love the transition, because when you first see her as Selina Kyle, there's almost this uncertainty. Like, she seems off-put by both Penguin and Batman, and she kind of walks away from it like, okay, I'm not cool with this. Even later in the film, when she's working with Batman, when she's Selina Kyle, she, like, just civilian garb, she doesn't have that it. But then when she's in the suit, when she's Catwoman, there's more confidence there. In her body language, in her facial expressions, in her tone, there's just that switch, and it made her seem even more on par with Batman to me. Because we see Robert Pattinson when he first has to leave the cave, like, as himself, and he's wearing sunglasses because he can't, like, literally the sunlight hurts him because he's out at night all the time, and he barely leaves the Batcave in the day.
Yeah.
So then, while he's in the Iceberg Lounge, he's looking for any sort of connection, because earlier when he got the thumb drive, he saw that the mayor had left with a woman who had clearly been beaten. It's implied that this woman may or may not have been a sex worker, but we're like, okay, this is this dirty little secret. We need to find out what happened to her. He follows Selina home. He finds out that Selina is taking care of this woman. Apparently, Selina and, like, from what a lot of people have told me, they believe it was implied Selina and Annika were a couple. Annika is the name of this woman. Or it might have been Annika, because she was, I couldn't quite place the accent, but she seemed foreign.
They said she was Russian.
They did say she was Russian?
Okay. I thought they were in a relationship too, but then when she referred to her as a kid, I was like, oh, okay, probably not then.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was thinking. I'm like, I thought that she was just looking out for her. Like, and people are like, oh no, they confirmed Selina Kyle's bisexual in this film by having her have a girlfriend. And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, like, I didn't see much romantic moments between them. Then again, Annika also didn't have much screen time as well. For a 3-hour film, they were not at all liberal with giving characters screen time.
No.
Which I can appreciate. This is Batman's story. Like, I can't... There was very... Maybe, like, one or two scenes where they cut away from Batman, and it was to, like, kind of show what Riddler was doing. Otherwise, this was all Batman. So Selina is kind of, like, undercover for Batman later at the, at not Iceberg Lounge, but 44 Below, which is the lounge underneath the lounge where all the shady business deals are happening, with Bruce's contact lens inside of Selina's eyes. We're getting scans of all these people. We're seeing dirty cops are chilling here. We're seeing the DA, Gil Coulson, is here. And I kind of laugh because Bruce is not at all subtle about anything. He's like, I need you to make eye contact with all these people. Like, there's just such a lack of social awareness with Bruce. Like, he very much has not mastered the human, the Bruce Wayne side of this duality. And so it leads to these moments where he's like, yeah, you need to stare at them. And she's like, at one point she passes Gil, and Bruce is like, I need you to look back at him. I didn't get the full scan. And she's like, if I look back at him, he's going to think I want to talk to him. And I don't want to talk to him. And he's like, you need to look back now. And she's like, fine. Turns around, and the guy immediately gets up and walks over to her. And she's like, oh, good. Now he's coming here. You see what you've done? And it just starts a whole scene where she's got, like, try and talk in secrets out of this guy about rats. Because now the new riddle is that they're looking for a rat with wings. They're looking for El Rata something. Like, it was in Spanish. And literally the whole time they're saying rat with wings. I'm like, I think he's referring to Batman. Like, because to me, a rat with wings is a bat. Right?
I don't know.
And they're constantly saying stool pigeon. They're saying all these birds other than a bat. But anyway, she's trying to figure out who the rat is. I think they're going with Sal Maroni. They're trying to figure out who ratted out Sal Maroni's drug operation. And the guy, like, Gil refuses to say. And eventually another sex worker says that asking those kinds of questions is what got Annika killed or disappeared. And Selena's like, what do you know about that? And she's like following the girl, and the girl's refusing to talk. But then Carmine Falcone shows up, and there's tension there, and there's immediate jealousy from Bruce, because Bruce is like, what relationship do you have with Carmine? And she's like, none of your business. I'm done with this. Takes out the contacts, and that's the end of that. Meanwhile, Gil Coulson tries to give Selena a ride. Selena's like, no, I got a taxi. Gil gets into his, like, van or whatever, and what happens, Cicely?
He gets got, like the idiot he is. The Riddler, before he even gets in the car, like, they already hint at the fact that Riddler is gonna kill him. And so once he eventually gets in his car, Riddler's already waiting in the back of the car for him, and he puts this, like, collar around his neck.
Yep, the time bomb.
And it's a combination locker. It's a combination collar. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know if he knocks him out before he puts the collar on or not. That's not really very important. But yeah, he basically just puts a collar on him, and then they kind of just fade out from the scene.
And then we get to see Bruce go to the mayor's funeral. Yeah, I believe it was the mayor's funeral. And when he arrives, it's like first he sees Carmine Falcone, and there's like this standoff because Bruce is trying to see the woman that went with Carmine because he thinks it's Selena. It's not Selena. And they have this standoff where Carmine actually reveals, like, yeah, your father saved my life. Like, I came to his door just trying to, because I was shot, and he did surgery on me right on your dinner table. I looked up and saw you from the stairwell. And, like, Carmine is very much a man that knows he's powerful, but there's almost a little bit of respect for the Waynes because of what Thomas did. And he tells Bruce, he's like, you know why he did that? You know why? We were friends. And then Bruce is like, he did it because of the Hippocratic Oath. He wouldn't have let anyone die. And then he just walks away. And Carmine's like, Hippocratic Oath. I'll remember that. Like, he's very much, he is full-blown Godfather. Like, full-blown. During the process of this funeral, a car gets rammed into the cathedral, I believe it was. And, like, everyone runs for the hills. Robert Pattinson, Bruce Wayne, saves the child of the mayor, who was in the direct path of the car. When the person gets out of the car, it's Gil with his mouth duct taped and a phone taped to his hand. And as you said, the time bomb collar wrapped around his neck and a note attached to him that says, for the Batman. Because the Riddler's, like, obsessed with Batman. He's leaving him all these notes. So then, as we get at, like, Bruce leaves, comes back later as Batman, and this scene was so tense. He takes the tape off of Gil's mouth, and the Riddler is like, okay, there's three riddles that you have to answer, and they're all slowly trying to peel the truth from Gil. Like, how much does it cost to buy your honesty or whatever, to buy your truth? And he's like, yeah, how much, and and Batman's answering all these riddles like they're nothing. But then the last riddle is, who is the rat? And like Gil's like, I can't say that. And he's like, you have to or you're going to die. And he's like, you're talking to a dead man. If I give you this answer, then I am dead. I die no matter what. At least if I die this way, no one else goes with me. If I say all of Gotham goes to hell, everything's done. And he literally just lets himself get blown up. And I don't know how Batman survived that because he was right in front of them when the collar went off.
He's impervious.
Right? I mean, he does get damaged at least because he's knocked out and then he wakes up in the police precinct. And, like, he's surrounded. They have almost every single cop in this precinct in this one little interrogation room getting ready to, like, try and take Batman's mask off. And at this point, they sort of, like, some believe that Batman was in on it with the Riddler. They think that they were partners. Batman flat out calls the chief of police a fucking scumbag and is like, I think you were in on it because what was he so afraid of to reveal who the rat was? He would have rather died than speak the truth. So what is it? Are you the rat? Are you a crooked cop? And there's this, and then Jim Gordon kind of, tell us what Jim Gordon does.
Is Jim Gordon the one who worked with Batman?
Yes.
Okay. There's too many names in this. I can only remember some. I can barely remember my own name, guys.
Fun fact, by the way, Jeffrey Wright, first person to portray Jim Gordon as a person of color.
Took him long enough.
Yeah, right.
Somehow he gets all the other cops to leave the room. I don't know how he has, like, some authority over the whole precinct, but apparently he does.
He's got respect, that's about it. And he only, like, they told him he's got, like, 5 minutes at best.
So he tells them all to leave. And by leave, I mean, like, just go to, like, the next room over. And he then has, like, a whispering match with Batman, where he's basically trying to look like he's acting tough towards him, when he's really just like, yeah, I'm trying to get you out of here.
Take these keys.
And yeah, he basically just tells Batman to punch him and to take his keys and leave, and that's what he does.
And as they work together, they do, after the fact, they deduce that it's possible the Penguin might be the informant. And this begins one of my favorite scenes in this film, the chase sequence. They go to the drug bust area where they find out the Maroni drug operation has been running all along. It never got shut down. And they also find Selina Kyle. And I wasn't sure what she was doing there. I think I got distracted at some point, but I found out after the fact that she finds Annika's dead body in a car there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. Everything else that was going on, that just got erased from my memory. But in looking back on the notes, that's what happens. That's why she's there. She was looking for Annika. And Batman gets shot at. He goes down. But then he somehow gets away when no one's looking. And he's... fucking Batmobile is there. We finally get the Batmobile. Oh my god, this car. And this whole car chase where he's going after Penguin.
Well, before the car chase even happens, something small that I noticed that was really funny was the fact that, like, right when we're introduced to the Batmobile,
right,
he's, like, getting ready to, like, charge at whoever's, like, the people that are there, and the Batmobile stalls.
Yeah, I remember that, too, yeah.
And I thought that was just, like, a really cool moment to see, because, like, as we've already kind of discussed, like, he doesn't use the Batmobile, like, frequently in the movie, and I mean, like, we don't really know exactly how much he uses it in general, but it doesn't seem like it's something that he uses on a daily basis.
I think this was the first time he used it.
Yeah, so naturally, like, he's not going to be experienced with using it, so it was nice to, like, see, like...
just see the car just, like, move an inch and then stop, like, ooh, shit.
Especially because, like, this movie's pretty, like, serious and intense for the most part, so that was, like, a nice moment.
Yeah, I remember audibly laughing when that happened, because I was just like, what? Like, this scene and, like, just seeing Penguin do whatever it takes to outrun the Batmobile, like, in his own car, obviously, but...
I love how you were like, yeah, he didn't commit any law, and he didn't, like...
No, at the time.
I was gonna say, he commits a lot of laws.
At this point, he breaks a lot of laws. Like, he's driving against traffic, he
probably killed a lot of people.
Oh, he definitely killed a lot of people, because he actively, at one point, after... I love seeing how frustrated he gets, because at first he's doing okay, he's just driving around cars... And then he's caught between two oil tankers, and the car that's in front of the oil tankers isn't moving, and it's positioned perfectly where he can't get out, and Batmobile's just coming after him, and he's just like, come on, come on, move, move! And he finally just gets pissed off and, like, floors it, rear ends the fucking car in front of him, and then when he realizes he can't get far ahead, he just, like... intentionally causes the oil tankers to, like, crash into each other.
A lot of explosions in this scene.
And another hilarious moment is we see the Batmobile. At some point, there's a ramp for some reason, and the Batmobile drives up it. And then we see from Colin Farrell, Penguin's viewpoint, he sees all these explosions, like, ha ha, ha ha, I gotcha, I fucking gotcha, I got him. I'm free! And then the Batmobile just comes billowing out of all the flames in midair, and he's like, ah! It was just such a great scene. That might have been the best scene of the film.
He really sold it.
And so Batman gets him, and then he puts him up against the wall. He's got Gordon with him, and they got him, like, zip-tied or whatever, and they're like, who's the rat with wings? Like, and they're like, what do you think of that? And then he's like, what do I think of it? I think it's the worst fucking Spanish I've ever heard. El rata? It's la rata. Everyone knows that. And at that point, that sets them off, because they're like, wait a minute. Did Riddler make a mistake? Riddler's never made a mistake. Like, there's gotta be a reason for it. And then Penguin says, well, I've been saying all along, rat with wings sounds like a bat. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And then he's like, you are. Well, and then Loretta, whatever. And then Batman's like, URL. And he realizes it's a website address. Enters it. By the way, this is a website address in real life that they use for promoting this movie. So he enters the address, and he's speaking with the Riddler. And he's like, yeah, it's the Penguin, the rat. And Riddler's like, interesting. You're not quite seeing the big picture yet. I've got more for you. I've got another victim. This scene hits me. They talk about an orphan. They're like, oh, well, clearly it's the orphanage. And I'm like, no, he's talking about Bruce Wayne, you fucking idiot. Whatever orphan is of any note in this goddamn city. So sure enough, they go to some abandoned orphanage, which is now a drug house. And they find some stuff there, and they find out that... It looked like the Riddler literally had a picture of himself with Bruce Wayne. Not like side by side, but like in what looked like a choir picture or whatever. But Bruce Wayne is circled, and they, like, follow him, and that's when they realize the orphan in question is actually Bruce Wayne. So they, and it's also finding, and Riddler also finds, like, a trail that the ruins of the orphanage were actually funded by Thomas and Martha Wayne. So Riddler's holding a grudge against the Wayne family. So and Bruce finds out, oh my god, he's going after Bruce Wayne, which is him, and he goes there. And this was nice because in the beginning of the film, when Bruce and Alfred interact, Bruce is very much a dick to Alfred, in my opinion. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, he literally is just like, he flies just like,
you're not.
Which is like the biggest douchebag move that you can do. So that was like crazy.
I mean, it's pretty evident that Bruce doesn't really know how to socialize with people in general. It seems like he's already, like, he's just gotten used to, like, retreating into his, like, Batman persona. And even as Batman, he's, like, not much of a talker anyways. So, like, when he's just himself, he doesn't really know how to communicate with people. Like, you can tell that he cares about Alfred, but he also, like I said, doesn't know how to communicate properly.
Yeah. But when he realizes the danger that is now being posed to Alfred, because Alfred's the one that's at Wayne Manor, along with a maid. There's a maid now for some reason, which I don't get. But anyway, they, like, so now he's racing to Wayne Tower. He's calling, or Wayne Mansion, and he's calling Alfred. He's like, Alfred, pick up! And while this is happening, we're getting, like, the side-by-side where Alfred finds a package that's labeled to the Batman, fireproof, and he opens a box that is supposed to be for Bruce's eyes only, and it, like, blows up in his face. And we don't, but, like, the point where it blows up, like, we don't know, like, right, the cinematography here was brilliant. I love this. Before it blow up, we see it blow up, the phone's picked up, and Dory answers it, and he's like, like, you need to get Alfred out of there. But, like, something terrible's gonna happen. And she's like, Master Wayne, it already has. About an hour ago. And then the feeling of dread that seeped through me at hearing that. That he was already too late. Because he went to that fucking orphanage first. Like, just how crazy was that?
It was definitely a sad scene to watch. But also, you did that to yourself, Bruce.
Right? And then while that...
And also, fuck you, Alfred, for opening somebody else's mail. Nobody told you to open that fucking package, bro.
Right?
It's not addressed to you, Alfred.
It literally says...
Like, he had no reason to open that fucking mail.
It literally says, for Bruce Wayne's eyes only.
There was no reason for him to open that.
So, while that's happening, the Riddler leaks evidence that Thomas Wayne... Who was running for mayor before he was murdered, had hired Falcone to kill a journalist for threatening to reveal embarrassing details about Martha's history of mental illness. And that was crazy. And I will never Easter egg. I'm looking at my notes real quick. The person that they were going to have, that Edward, there we go. Edward Elliott was the reporter. And they use terminology that we need to hush Edward Elliott up. Easter egg, Thomas Elliott, whose father was murdered in the Batman comics, would become Batman villain Hush. So that was big Easter egg I liked. So, Bruce Wayne, he goes to Alfred and Carmine to get the story. Carmine says, yeah. Now, like, I knew this conversation was going to happen. Yeah, your father, he wanted Thomas taken care of. And we tried to scare him, but he wouldn't budge. So we did what was right for your father and your mother. Because I think they were saying that his mom, were they saying his mom was in Arkham or that she went to Arkham Asylum?
Oh, no. I just know that they were trying to cover up whatever was going on with the mom.
Yeah, that part confused me. But yeah, so after that happens, Selina also reaches out to Batman, and after kind of pushing her a little bit, it's revealed that her relationship with Carmine is that she's his daughter, which is new to me. I think they did something similar to that, or maybe exactly that, in the Long Halloween story arc, but that's very much forgotten. They do not follow in comics that Selina Kyle is Carmine Falcone's daughter anymore. But so, after that, she does learn that Falcone strangled Annika because the mayor told her that Falcone was the informant, and Falcone decided to kill her. That's right, Carmine Falcone is the rat. And Riddler's last riddle is that you need to bring the rat into the light. So now Selina's going to try and kill Carmine. Batman goes to stop her. A huge big fight happens in the Iceberg Lounge again. The Iceberg Lounge is host to a lot of fucking fights.
Yes.
And after we get there, they do manage to get Falcone. They bring him out, and Penguin is being big man on campus, and he's kind of talking some shit. Carmine says something to him, and Penguin's like, I'll splatter your fucking brains out right now! And he goes to pull out a gun. Carmine gets shot. Everyone thinks it's Penguin at first, but they quickly realize that it's Riddler did it, because they brought Carmine into the light of a street lamp. And when they go to the room where the sniper shot came from, they realize Riddler's literally been waiting there that whole time for them to bring Carmine out into the open. So they do manage, they find Riddler at a cafe down the block. They arrest him. They search his place. They find more notes. And eventually Riddler tells Batman, hey, I want to talk to you, only you. Do you remember what happened at this point?
When they talk?
Yes.
Good question.
I will note, Cicely started getting a really bad migraine towards the end of this movie.
Yeah. There was points where I was, like, mainly focused on not dying. They take him to, I don't even know where they take him. Like, I don't think it was a jail.
There's only, like, two big names in comics. There's Arkham Asylum and there's Blackgate Penitentiary. And I think they took him to Arkham. I remember. They took him to Arkham Asylum.
And they have him in a cell of some sorts.
Yes.
And I don't remember everything he said, obviously, but essentially, I feel like he was, like, Riddler was trying to, like, relate to Batman.
Yeah.
And basically tell him, like, we're basically the same person, and, like, we want the same thing, essentially. And Batman is obviously like, no, fuck you.
I'm nothing like you.
And basically, Riddler just tries to get under his skin. And then towards the end of the conversation, he's just like, well, none of this really matters because I'm just going to blow up Arkham.
No, he's not going to blow up Arkham. He actually says Arkham is like the only safe place.
Well, he says that he set up bombs.
Yeah, and he tells him, he hints at it, and Batman's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you didn't find it? It was right there, under your nose all along. And then he starts laughing, and Batman just leaves, and he goes back to Riddler's, like, apartment or whatever. And he's doing all this searching, he deduces what the password is to the computer, and he finds out that Riddler has been, like, on the deep web or the dark web, whatever you want to call it, been streaming, like, his videos to, and he basically becomes, like, a terrorist leader as he, like, sways all these disenfranchised to his cause. And there's, like, a movement where all these people are gonna go after, Gotham Square Garden is what they called it. Not Madison Square Garden, but Gotham Square Garden. And that they're going to go in there with rifles and whatnot and Riddler garb, which, again, I hate what they did to Riddler's costume. It's a fucking gimp suit, as far as I'm concerned. They're going to call it tactical gear, but this shit was a gimp suit down to the mouth covering.
There wasn't much thought put into it.
It looked like shit. I hated it.
The fact that they put glasses over the mask.
Well, yeah, he still got to see, but yeah. Like,
it just looked really silly.
Even the tortured screams that this guy did while in the gimp suit, I was like, this seems like someone had a really big fetish going into making this character.
Yeah, it didn't really make his character come off as, like, intimidating or anything.
I always loved Riddler as the over-the-top, eccentric, like, genius. Like, he always came off as over-the-top because he knew he was better than everyone else. That's the Riddler I liked. This Riddler was the exact opposite. He felt used, abused. He felt like everyone treated him like shit. He felt disenfranchised. The only thing that he knew he was good at was he was like, yeah, I'm like, he says it when he's talking to Batman. He's like, we can work together. I'm the brains. You're Vibran. I couldn't have killed Carmine without you. You helped kill Carmine Falcone. And Batman's like, no, I didn't. But anyway, so Riddler becomes a cult, a terrorist leader, like, recruits all these people, and he set up car bombs all around the fault lines of Gotham City, so that way the plan is to just flood all of Gotham. Which is very similar to what he does in the Zero Year comic books, by the way. Great, great story. Definitely read that. It's like Batman Volume 5 of the New 52. Anyway. So, the bombs destroy the breakwaters around Gotham and flood the city, and a shelter is set up in Gotham Square Garden, which is also where this woman becomes mayor. That I feel like they wanted to make her an important character, and it just didn't connect. Her name was, like, Rail or whatever.
It was just another character that they didn't give enough screen time
Pretty much, yeah. Like, they tried making her important, because they tried being like, no, we need to evacuate you out of here. And she's like, I'm not leaving these people.
Like, you think with the 3 hours they had, they would have had at least a little time to just give other character, the side characters, some more time.
I'm okay with how they distribute. I mean, I'm mad.
I'm not okay with
it. I'm mad that they didn't give Alfred more time.
Let's talk about it. I'm not okay with it.
Because I didn't, I was upset about Alfred. Everyone else I was fine with. I was like, Riddler, you know what? If you did a good Riddler concept, costume design, yeah, I would have wanted more screen time for him. But Gimp Suit Riddler, fuck off. Fuck off with Gimp Suit Riddler. Catwoman, she got the perfect amount of screen time, in my opinion. Penguin, you know what? Yeah, Penguin got the perfect amount of screen time too. Other than Alfred, I think they did good. Who would you want to see more of?
I would wanted to see more of Rael, or however you pronounced her name.
She wasn't important.
Shut the fuck up. Don't ask me how I feel, and then don't tell me that it's not important.
Can't wait for you guys to hear our Spider-Man recording. That's coming.
If you're gonna ask what my thoughts are, then you don't get the room to interject and say that you don't agree.
You just interjected and said that you disagreed with what I
Except
said.
Except when I want to, then that's okay. I make the rules here.
All right, so you say you want more screen time for Rael. Who else did you want more screen time for?
I wish they would have given more time to Annika. Okay. Like, for us to actually give a shit about her, because I really didn't, so it wasn't that impactful.
Yeah, I really didn't care about her either.
Maybe the twins?
Eh.
I think it might have been interesting to see how they got into the business.
I will say, they potentially might come back, because they have officially announced, there's no release date yet, but Penguin is going to get his own HBO Max TV series.
That's not super exciting to me.
It's exciting for me. I fucking loved Colin Farrell as Penguin. And since the twins work under Penguin, they might get brought back. They didn't die. Anyone else on your list?
No.
No? Okay, then. So, they try to shoot Rael. They do shoot her, but it doesn't kill her. Gordon saves her. Batman's fighting all these Riddler thugs. The fact that the thugs were more of a physical threat than the actual Riddler was. And at one point, he's getting his ass handed to him pretty badly with all of his injuries. And he takes a green liquid and injects himself with it, proceeds to go on a roid rage, and beats a man almost to death.
He does this only because the person that he wants to attack is attacking Catwoman.
Yeah.
Because, mind you, throughout this whole movie, they've had, like, a flirtatious, like, relationship. Mainly because Catwoman is just flirtatious in general.
Yeah, that's fair.
But they did share a kiss before, like, way before this scene, so yeah. There is some emotion between them. And there's, like, one of the last, what are they called?
What?
Riddlers? Like,
I just call them Riddler thugs. Like, they're terrorists. And, like, to put it plainly.
One of the thugs is choking out Selina, so, you know, he's like, gotta take the roids!
And that's the thing.
What was it? Was it, because, like, my, if it wasn't green, I would have been like, oh, it's adrenaline, but it's green. And there is a special chemical substance in DC Comics that's green called Venom, and it's associated with Bane. So I'm just like, yo, are you telling me Bane already has been introduced before this movie, or are you telling me Batman somehow has Venom before Bane's been introduced?
Don't look at me, because I couldn't give you any answers.
I'm looking at her like that meme of a guy that looks like he's been smoking crack and is pointing at the conspiracy board.
Yes.
I'm just like, tell me what this means, damn it.
They definitely wouldn't explain it in this movie, because this is towards the end.
Yeah, they literally just, they gloss over that completely. Like, he beats the shit.
It seemed very random.
He beats the shit out of this guy almost to death, and then they pull, Gordon gets up there and pulls him off, and they're like, who are you? And the fucking guy that's bleeding out is just like, I am vengeance. Which I didn't get. I'm like, is that supposed to be the, like, one of the guys he beats the shit out of in the beginning of the movie?
Yeah, that was very confusing.
And even Bruce is kind of just like, what is this? What is this? Like,
that's my line.
And, but yeah, so, I was about to ask, how do they end this scene? And it's like, power cables are going down, all the people are in water, and there's a live electrical cable that's about to freaking kill everyone by electrocution. And Batman just jumps out to the cable, takes... He doesn't have batarangs. That was something I was upset about. This scene in particular would have been easier if he had batarangs, but no. He just has the one bat symbol that he can detach from his chest. So he jumps out, grabs the cable, detaches the symbol, cuts the cable so that no one's in danger, and then he just drops, and, like, we're assuming that people think he drowns, but he clearly doesn't. He lives. No question.
It was pretty cinematic. I feel like if he had a batarang, then they wouldn't have been able to shoot such a cinematic scene in that moment.
It could have been cinematic.
Well, yes, but also it would have just been a different vibe. I liked the way that this scene was shot.
Here's what I would have liked. Just a running gag throughout the film that he's terrible at throwing batarangs. Because, like you said, with the Batmobile, we're 2 years in, but he's new to a lot of this technology. So what if he was just absolute shit at throwing batarangs? And then in that one scene, he throws the batarang. Camera slowly follows the batarang as it perfectly cuts the cable.
Yeah.
That would have been a good scene.
Yeah.
Put it in the second movie. Oh yeah, that's the other thing. This is supposed to be the first of a trilogy, apparently. So with that said, we get Riddler, who is still in Arkham Asylum, and he befriends the man that we can only guess is the Joker. Right?
I mean, do we know anybody else that is known for hysterically laughing?
I will say, when I found out who the actor was for Joker, I think they went uncredited in this film, but it's the same guy who plays Druig in The Eternals. And I was like, not this guy. This guy just... I shouldn't say that he just looks like a douche, but he's got a look that you immediately would... That if I was a casting director, I would have immediately stereotyped him as a villain. So when I saw that they casted him as Joker, I was like, okay. He looks like a dick, but could he be a Joker? It's a big shoes to fill.
I mean, he did good with his, like, one line.
Right? And then Selina says that she's giving up on Gotham. She's going to Bloodhaven, which, you know, maybe we're going to see her in the future Nightwing movie. They have confirmed that they're trying to make a Nightwing movie. It's in development, so I really want that to see that movie. I went to this movie with my Nightwing t-shirt on. Nightwing, one of my favorite DC character of all time. I'm going to say that right now. I love Batman, but I was always a Robin fan. So, I'll put that out there. They share a kiss. They ride on their motorcycles together until they get to the city limit. Then Selina leaves. Batman goes to the bat signal. Batman aids recovery efforts and vows to inspire hope in Gotham.
Wow.
Right?
Also, like, I didn't realize, like, while I was watching the movie, but the song Something in the Way by Nirvana was, like, basically framed around the whole movie.
Yes.
And I thought that was really cool.
That was something that someone pointed out, because I remember the composer for this film, which I said it earlier. I have it here, I swear. Michael Giacchino, he composed the theme for Batman. He was so excited, he composed it before they even started filming. And they found out that it works perfectly as an accompaniment to that song by Nirvana.
Nice.
So they used that in promotional material all over the place. All right, so we're going to do our in-depth discussion on this film. I got some prepared questions to ask Cicely. I'll answer them as well, of course. And yeah, that's what we're going to do after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. All right, so you ready for these questions?
Sure thing.
Question number one. Do you think this movie does enough to entice people who aren't Batman fans?
I would say yes. Because I'm not a Batman fan.
Really?
Dun, dun, dun. I mean, I wouldn't say I hate Batman or anything, but, like, I also wouldn't, like, in general, like, I, like, in the past, I wasn't, like, I wasn't expeditiously trying to see the fucking Batman movies that were coming out, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are some aspects of this that I was kind of like, eh. Like, we talked about Alfred's lack of screen time, and then they have a scene where it's like, oh, Alfred's his father figure, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's like, that's not established.
I think what might turn people away is how long it is.
Yes. It is a commitment to see this film. A lot of people have come to me and said they want to see it, and I'm like, okay, but just be prepared, because it's 3 hours long. And they're like, what?
Like, a lot of people, like, no matter what the movie is, a lot of people, like, don't expect a movie in a theater to be that long.
There are only two superhero films that are longer than the Batman. One of them is Avengers Endgame, and the longest one is Zack Snyder's Justice League. Because Zack Snyder's Justice League is literally over 4 hours long.
Hot damn.
Yeah, like, schedule a fucking intermission for that. I don't think they did enough. I love Batman. I went into this because I am a Batman fan, because I'm a DC Comics fan, and I was excited because DC, they got like 50-50 track record on whether or not their films are good or not. For one, this film was not connected to the DCEU, which is why they got away with a different casting of Batman, because I think Ben Affleck is just out of the Batman business now. Which sucks, because I want Zack Snyder's vision to happen. I want it. Ben Affleck was originally supposed to be Batman for this film. They had a completely different script in mind. They were going to have Deathstroke the Terminator in this, but anyway, I'm digressing. For one, we don't establish Alfred as a father figure well enough. Like, I only cared about Alfred possibly dying because I have that history. I have years of knowledge of, oh yeah, Alfred is important to Batman. Anyone who goes into this, literally all the two scenes we see of Alfred getting blown up in place of Bruce Wayne is Bruce telling him that he's not his father, and Bruce also sort of making fun of the fact that he has Wayne cufflinks, and he's like, you're not a Wayne. And it's like, Bruce, you're such a fucking dick to the one of the only two people that have ever taken care of you. Let's see. Question two. Do you find Batman stories more appealing when they lean towards detective stories or action movies?
I definitely prefer when it leans more on the detective side.
Same.
Just because I'm a person that enjoys mystery more than action.
Right? Like, we could have easily put this on Mystery Motel.
Yeah.
Like, this, like, there are some Batman stories that are just full-on noir detective stories that I love, like Long Halloween. Everyone loves, I won't say everyone, but most people love the Long Halloween. It was a comic book story arc that literally lasted over a year, 13 months, and then it got adapted into a two-part animated film. And that's how big it was. Like, the Long Halloween was just this great detective thriller. And there wasn't as much action. Like,
they had to throw some comic book action in there somewhere, but the majority of this story was just Batman trying to figure out who the Holiday Killer is. And I do love those story arcs more than action movies, especially because we got our fill of Batman action movies with Justice League already, in my opinion, and Batman vs. Superman. Do you think, this is question three, do you think they struck a good chord with keeping the technology modern instead of going old school or futuristic?
For the most part, I would say yes.
They definitely tried, like, they've gone on the record and said they wanted to make this seem realistic, they wanted it to be modern, they wanted it to look like this was something he put together himself, which is crazy because he's a billionaire, but... They also made it clear that he's not interested in running the billionaire business. So I imagine he just doesn't have as much access to tech as another Batman would. If that makes sense. But question four. What was one scene in this film that stayed in your mind after leaving the theater?
I would have to say the paragliding scene.
Oh.
Only because...
The one where he escapes the GCPD.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one of them in there.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to clarify because we didn't say that when we were discussing the plot.
I really questioned why they did Robert Pattinson like that because they had a camera angle where it was like basically like it was almost like he had a camera on his forehead. It was like a
GoPro.
And it just was such an odd angle. Like, it was almost like we were looking at his face from his, like, forehead. Not completely, but it was just a really weird fixed angle. And it just made him look very silly and goofy.
They totally GoPro'd that. And also, like, I feel bad because, like, they went full body wingsuit there. Like, they had it between his legs. They had it between the length of his legs and his arms. And that's how a wingsuit is in real life, but you just remember the comics where they had gliders, like Batwing gliders or whatever, and those look badass. Something else I liked about that scene in particular, his landing was awful.
Yeah.
He literally is like, you can tell he's like calculating his head, he's like, alright, if I open it at this point, I might land on that bus. And then he just completely forgets that he had a parachute, because then the parachute gets caught on the bridge and he just eats shit.
It just reminded me of many times where I would play a Batman game and I would do the exact same thing.
When was the last time you played a Batman game?
Many eons ago.
I was going to say, dang. The scene for me is the car chase scene. I spoke about that at length earlier. That scene will live rent-free in my head for at least a month. And then once it comes out on digital... Actually, the Batman's coming to HBO Max, like, April 19th, I think? Because I think it's 45 days, so, like, a month and a half. 6 weeks, yeah. I'll ask this question now. How would you rank Robert Pattinson against other live-action Batmen? And I have, like, 8 live-action Batmen listed.
Okay.
I'm not counting the little shit from Gotham because he's Bruce Wayne. He doesn't become Batman.
Well, I'm going to be honest here. Since I'm not a DC fan, like, I've literally haven't really watched almost any of the Batman movies before this one.
Really? I got the list. Did you see Batman 1966?
No.
So you didn't see Adam West at all?
Like, I saw Justice League. Like, that's as close as I got.
But so you saw Ben Affleck.
I didn't see, like, any of the, like, Batman movies where okay. It was just him. Like, it was focusing on him.
Well, to be fair, Ben Affleck never had a movie that was focused on him. But
yeah, that's fair.
But so we had Adam West, who was in Batman 66 and also the live-action television series. We had Michael Keaton, who did Batman and Batman Returns. We had Val Kilmer, who did Batman Forever. George Clooney, who did Batman and Robin. Christian Bale, who did the Dark Knight trilogy. Ben Affleck, who did Batman vs. Superman and Justice League. Ian Glenn, who did Titans. And Robert Pattinson, who did the Batman. So, between Ben Affleck and Robert Pattinson, who do you think was the better Batman?
Definitely Robert.
Yeah.
But I kind of have a bias because I like Robert Pattinson. Pattinson.
So I'm going to clarify right now. I may or may not be suffering from recency bias, meaning that because Robert Pattinson is the most recent Batman I've seen, he holds a high spot on my list. Specifically, on my ranking, he's number one. And I've seen all of these Batmen. And just to put it out there, transparency, my ranking, Robert Pattinson, number one. Number two, Michael Keaton. Number three, Ben Affleck. Number four, Adam West, because I'm sorry. I know he's a goofy Batman, but nostalgia, man. Like, there's never a good place to put a bomb. Adam West taught me that. I know you don't get that joke, but they'll get it. Number five, Christian Bale. Number six, Val Kilmer. Number seven, Ian Glenn. And number eight, George Clooney. George Clooney, I grew up on the George Clooney movie. There is literally a poster downstairs in what used to be my dad's man cave of Batman and Robin with, like, Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy and Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze and all that. Chris O'Donnell as Robin, but George Clooney Batman, as far as both it being a film and an adaptation of Batman, it's a travesty. But if I can look at it and just say, you know what, this is a terrible film, and I'm just going to enjoy how terrible it is, I can enjoy it. But as far as Batman, George Clooney will always be last. I just gotta say that.
Okay.
You know what? Homework for you. You're watching Batman and Robin.
No, absolutely not.
Why not?
Because I said no.
Okay. Well, we're all about consent here, ladies and gentlemen. All right, number six. How effectively do you feel they used the rogues in this film?
What do you mean, rogues?
Batman, when in comics, we refer to the multitude of villain, the plural form of villains for a superhero character is
The DC people are just like, what the fuck?
It's a
why did you bring somebody who's not a fan of DC on this fucking episode?
You're a fucking Marvel fan, aren't you? Anyway. But, the rogues gallery is, like, the plural form of superhero villains. So, I'll go one by one. Riddler. How do you feel they used Riddler?
Good enough.
I've already made my opinion known on Riddler. Penguin.
He was a really good, he wasn't really a villain, per se.
What, Penguin?
Like, he is a villain. Like, I was aware that he's a villain, but I wouldn't say that in this movie he was necessarily, like, a big bad.
He wasn't the big bad, but, like, he kind
of... Like, he got in the way of Batman a little bit, but, like, it wasn't like he was, like, really stopping him from what he was trying to get done.
He was, like, if we were doing D&D terms, would you say maybe, I don't know, chaotic neutral?
I don't know.
Because he breaks the law a lot. But he doesn't make it obvious that he's broken the law. And he's, like, mostly out for himself.
Yeah.
How would you feel they used Catwoman? I know that they didn't use her as a villain, really, but she's got that anti-hero vibe.
They used her as I thought they would.
And how do you feel they used Carmine Falcone? Yeah.
I feel like they kind of just, like, threw him in and then, like, didn't really put much explanation behind him. And then they were like, all right, lore dump, now he's dead.
Yeah, they definitely used him as the lore dump character. Honestly, I notice in a lot of Batman comics, especially modern day, people can't seem to be able to write for the simple character villains like Carmine Falcone. Like, in real life, Carmine Falcone would be a serious problem. In a world where you gotta worry about terrorists who write riddles, Carmine doesn't seem like that big of a problem.
Yeah.
I think story-wise, they used him the best they could, and then they got rid of him, they killed him off. So, as far as this trilogy's concerned, we're never gonna see Carmine again. Speaking of the trilogy, seventh question, probably the last one. I might throw a bonus one in there. What do you want to see in the future of this franchise?
I would like to see more development in the side characters.
Okay. I think I want to see Nightwing. Which is going to be difficult because there is no Robin in this film. So let's get Robin in there. Let's have Robin appear at some point. Maybe, I don't know. Don't ham fist him, obviously. I want him done right, but I wouldn't mind seeing Robin. I think villains I want to see Matt Reeves take on. Dr. Freeze. Mr. Freeze. Definitely. Are you familiar with Mr. Freeze?
Kind of, yeah.
He's a brilliant villain. Yeah. And when in the right hands of the right writer, they could do amazing things with Mr. Freeze. And I want that. Especially a live action one. That would be dope. So, bonus question. Just for the shits and giggles of it. I've seen a lot of people saying, hey, the Batman is DC's answer to the greatest superhero movie of all time. Because a lot of people were saying that Spider-Man No Way Home was the GOAT. So, which is better, Spider-Man No Way Home?
Spider-Man No Way Home. There ain't even no question behind that.
All right, I'm not going to ask you to explain it because we got the Spider-Man No Way Home episode coming March 29th. Put it on your fucking calendars, ladies and gentlemen.
Like, I would say that this is a good movie. Like, it's definitely one of the best DC movies I've seen.
I'll say it's up there for best Batman movie of all time.
Sure. Does it touch No Way Home?
No.
No. Doesn't even come close.
And I know a lot of people are going to give me shit because they're going to be like, oh, well, I bet you if Michael Keaton Batman came back and Adam West came back that you'd say it was the best. No, I'd say it was a fucking copycat of No Way Home.
Yeah.
Mild spoiler for No Way Home. But yeah, like, No Way Home, it built something beautiful.
Yeah, there was a lot leading up to it.
The Batman, there was tumultuous times leading up to this. There were times we didn't even know if this film was going to be made. And I'm happy it was made. I'm happy with the love that Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson put into it. Robert Pattinson was studying so hard for this role. By the way, fun fact, we almost got Nicholas Holt as the Batman. For our audio listeners, and they're only audio listeners, we don't have visual listeners, but I've been told multiple times that I look like Nicholas Holt. So we were this close to having people come up to me and being like, you look like Batman. And I'm still just going to hear, you look like R from Warm Bodies. God damn it, Pattinson!
I think he did a good job.
He did.
The role that he got.
He did absolutely great.
He did well playing a grungy emo boy.
This was definitely Nirvana inspired.
Yeah.
Like, scene kid, emo, alternative Batman, like.
Yeah. Like, I really enjoyed how they didn't, like, try to really make him look attractive necessarily. Not that he's not attractive.
He looked like shit half the time. Yeah,
he did. He looked like he had been through the ringer.
Like, what does Zoe Kravitz see in this man? Like,
I mean, she doesn't even really see his face. She just sees, like, the bottom half of his face.
Zoe Kravitz looks like fire every time she's on film. And then Robert Pattinson walks on looking like a deranged fucking coke fiend.
I don't think she's attracted to the way he looks. I think she's attracted to the darkness that surrounds him.
He's vengeance.
But yeah, I like...
She literally calls him vengeance. The amount of times that no one calls this guy Batman, they're like, come on, vengeance. And I'm like, was that literal? Like, is that just what he's called? He's just called vengeance? Like,
and then Riddler calls him the Batman.
And then it's like... da-da-da-da.
But yeah, like, I feel like with Ben Affleck, they definitely wanted him to look really attractive. But I enjoyed that they weren't, like, focusing on, like, making him, like, look sexy or anything.
Yeah.
Like, it was a nice change.
It was. I liked it. So, anything else you want to say?
I think I'm all set.
All right. Well, this was an absolutely great time. We enjoyed seeing this movie, despite the killer migraine that Cicely got towards the end.
Yeah.
Definitely. Go to your local theater. Because HBO Max's deal with airing movies the same day as they're in theaters is dead. That's not a thing anymore. So, go fuck your... Yeah, fucking drop HBO Max, apparently, unless you just really like their very small smattering of original content. We are not sponsored by HBO Max. I'm going to make that clear.
Unfortunately not.
I genuinely might drop HBO Max. Do you watch HBO Max?
Not that I know of.
I might drop HBO Max. Just
not that the viewers care.
Meanwhile, Netflix is up by is going up $2. So
going bankrupt, guys.
I don't even have a car, so and I'm still being affected by these gas prices. All right. Well, much love to everyone. Happy to have you here. Please come back next week. Cicely's going to be back for a horror hotel. She's also going to come back for Spider-Man No Way Home comic chatter. That's March 29th and is going to be absolutely fun because it's going to be the first ever podcast episode to feature all three of us.
Crossover.
Me, Cicely, and JP. JP's coming back for that after having a Gaming Gab episode a couple weeks ago. Check that out in the archives of whichever podcast streaming app you have. Follow me, Clark Dion, on Twitter to get some more updates, both with my RDog20 Twitch, my wrestling pro wrestling announcer career, which slowly taking off. We're getting there. And you got some stuff to plug?
My YouTube channel still exists. I don't post on there very frequently, but if you wanted to catch up on the videos that I have posted, because there is a lot on there, you can search Gaming Experience featuring Cicely. That's C-I-C-E-L-Y.
That's right. And you might see me on there. Well, you won't see me, but you'll hear me.
Yes. He will definitely hear you.
If you want to see me, you have to go to my Twitch, RDog20. That's the only way you can see me. Or you can buy tickets to Impulse Pro Wrestling whenever we officially announce the date of the next event. But super excited, guys. Much love. Enjoy the rest of your day. And come back next week for more of 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
Bye.